I'd like to call this meeting to order, the Overton Office Board Meeting in the Overton Office, September 18th at 3 p.m. Is there any public comment? Okay. Do I hear a motion for acceptance of the agenda?
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Item D, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held August 21st, 2024.
I make a motion we accept the minutes as presented here.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Chair's report. I don't really have a report. We have another thank you card. I'm old-fashioned. I think it's important you all hear these. Dear OPD 5 Scholarship Committee, thank you for powering our great community. Oh, that's sweet. Thank you for powering our great community and powering my journey at Cal Poly with your scholarship. Much love, Kurt Felix.
Oh, cool.
Nice wording. And these really aren't anything special. I've been called three times today by the county that they are very desperate for election workers in our area, in Moapa and Moapa Valley, are way short. So if you guys have family, friends, anybody that you think might want to do it, encourage them.
Is it volunteer or is it paid?
It is paid. It's actually, I believe she told me it's $50 for the training, $200 for the election day, and early voting poll workers are paid $17 per hour, because it's a different amount of hours on that day. So, yeah, if you know anybody that can do it, they must be desperate. Election department never calls me for anything.
I might be looking for work next year. I'll keep that number handy.
And that's what I told her. I said, I can't do it this year, but I could try and do it next year. And this other thing, I only brought it because it's kind of exciting, all that's been going on, probably for those gentlemen that had to work on the stuff at the airport. But October 5th, they're having it's called the Young Eagles Rally, where they fly, take kids up and fly them. They've got so many people involved this year. They have over 120, I think it is, kids that are going to get flights. They've lined up tons of pilots to take the kids up in flights. They have a bunch of different displays, so you can get up there and see the airport, the renovations to it. And it's just a really well-managed program, and the kids that get to fly are 8 to 17, and they, in the Young Eagles program, they can actually go when they get out of high school at 18. They can actually get into the program because they have that background to become an airline pilot. I mean, they're that far along by the time they finish that program. So if any of you are free on that day, don't have anything to do, you might think about going up there. I'll stop on that now. And attorney's report?
I have nothing at this time. Just I'll have things later in the agenda.
Okay. Managers is...
Scott, would you like to give us the admin report?
I absolutely will. All right, this is my quarterly report. I do this March, June, September, December. We are in September. Here we go. Cybersecurity training. We had 100% attendance. The training highlighted potential dangers of outdated technology and the importance of cybersecurity practices to protect personal information. We had a really nice streak of nobody clicking on our phishing attempts. The last 4 months of zero.
Nice.
We've had 36,000 emails in August, 3,100 were spam. And there's the firewall blocks by country. Bulgaria, Russian Federation, 1 and 2. Server system uptime is at 100%. I really hate the board meeting that I have to report that it's not at 100. We've had a major issue then, but that's why I reported here. We're doing good. Data backup and restoration, 100% for the month of August. And now we're going to roll into customer service. New automatic bill pays. Green is 2024. We had 81 new signups in June, 73 and 28 in August. And that gives us a total of 9,991 customers using automatic bill pay, or 54.15% of our customer base.
That's good.
New customers on e-bill. If you look at July, we had a record-breaking month. And that's partly because the bills went out, but they didn't, USPS didn't get them there on time. So we had a lot of people call in and say they want to sign up. And also, new accounts, we automatically sign them up for this, and then they have to opt out. So that all gets recorded right here. It was a good month. So that gives us 5,721 customers on electronic e-bill, or 31% of our customer base as of September. Total number of calls, we're still down from 2023, 1,308 calls in August. And we are talking to those customers, or the on-hold wait time for those are right around 7 seconds per call is what they're waiting before they talk to customer service representative. And those calls are lasting right about 2.5 minutes. So everything's an acceptable range today. Total walk-in customers, we had 2,143 walk in our office doors in August. So this is the slide that I would have normally gone to Twitter or X, and I'm doing away with that. So we're not going to record that anymore. It got a little bit difficult to collect that information. You had to have a paid account to do it. So we're going to report on our website statistics, which maybe is even more important. And these are all rounded. The website statistics are all rounded. So in August, we had 4,300 unique visitors to our website. And if you look at the volume, we're up quite a bit from 2023. The average engagement time, so how long are they spending on the website? People just do not have attention spans like they used to. We're talking seconds. But we saw 47 seconds in August. That was the average time that those 4,300 people spent on our website. And then we'll move to Instagram. We got 11 new followers in June, 2 in July, 10 in August. We have 504 followers, and our reach in August was 337. And then Facebook is the big one. This is the number of posts. We did 19 in June, 11 in July, 10 in August.
Is that we're posting, or are the customers posting?
That's us posting.
Okay. Information now.
Yeah, information. Whether it's an outage, whether it's a holiday, whatever it is. And so new Facebook followers, we got 29 new followers in August. And our reach is really good. We're seeing 10,000. Anyone who saw the post on their feed, that's the reach. So 10,000 saw it in June, 10,000 in July, and 8,500 in August. For a total Facebook followers of 4,290, which is about 200 followers more than we had this time last year on Facebook. And that concludes my presentation. Is there any questions?
I really like the way you present it, because just seeing the numbers graphically, it's so much more informative, I think. So I really appreciate the extra work I think you guys put into printing it. Nice graphics.
Thank you.
I think it would be nice. I think it would help activity on the Facebook page if maybe we made an effort to maybe weekly post something on there, either educationally or something upbeat, so that everything they see isn't that there was an outage. Because that kind of is what our usual posts end up being. So it'd be kind of nice to have some kind of positive, which I'm sure you guys can figure out.
Okay, yeah.
Something.
Yeah, we talked about that at our last staff meeting.
Oh, good.
And we want to make sure that when we put out content that it's, you know, informative, that we're not saturating too much, so.
Yeah.
So we're weighing those different things by the content and the importance of the message.
Okay. Yeah, on social media, if you put out too much, I mean, they're gonna ignore your feed.
Exactly.
So it's just too much. So we're kind of in a debate, do we just put out outage information with, you know, our holidays and stuff, because then, but if you put too much, then it's just another OPD post.
I agree, but if
there's
it's
a
just,
balance there.
If there's just one or two a month that you throw out there that is a positive, if it's a, you know, winter, freezing, and something positive, you can tell people that help them with their bill or help them with the weather conditions or anything, just so that they receive a positive something from us.
Okay.
Instead of
Thank
just
you for that.
Sadness and things more than that.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have a person that has some background in that's been helping us. So
they have a newsletter that gives that kind of information too. And if you want to read more about OPD.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can find links, like if there's any articles in the paper or anything like that, maybe have that available through Facebook, so you can just click.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. Randall,
okay.
Why don't we turn to you?
Okay, great. So yesterday we had our pre-bid meeting for our major projects. Go ahead and go to that first slide. We had 8 contractors show up with about 20 guys. In the industry right now, it's interesting. So the estimators either estimate for substations or line builds. So these guys are bringing 4 and 5 guys per company. And we went to visit the next slide. We went out to all the projects. We took most of the day to go visit all the projects. And we have all of our plans online for all the contracts to download with all the bid documents. And that concludes
my... How many contracts?
8 contractors.
No, how many contracts are you talking about?
We'll let out 3 contracts.
Okay.
We've grouped some of these projects together that kind of mesh together.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have 3 contracts and... covering the 6 projects.
Okay, so 6 separate projects, but 3 contracts will be let.
Right, yeah.
Are they hungry?
I hope they are. I don't know how these companies, but there's 2 companies from California that have been doing work for NV Energy that reached out to us. They're very large companies, so hopefully be working in the area for NV Energy. We'll get some good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping to.
Did we have some of them that have been working up at Portis?
Yeah, Wasatch, Hunt, Cache Valley, Summit, Par. Actually, Par was taken over by Summit, so they're just called out by Summit contractors anymore. So we had a good, very good group. We anticipate some very good bids. That concludes my report. If you have any questions,
are we still online for our cutover on the 230?
Yes, we are.
This is that one of the projects here that they're bidding on?
No, that's completed. So they are coming back this October to finish the work, and then we'll be able to tie that in to the ring bus.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Randall. Kyle, let's go to line ops.
All right. Okay, for line ops for the month of August, we'll start with the measurables. So service installations for the line department, we end up having 39 residential hookups, no commercial for the month of August. A little slow in the commercial department there. Outages for the month of August, we had 12 planned and 3 unplanned. Relatively average there. And then for consumers affected and consumer hours, we had 652 consumers that were affected by those outages, and total hours was 1,083. It's interesting to note the one outage in particular was the majority of that. It was an outage of a dry lightning storm went through the Moapa area, and tripped out a circuit and just happened to be stanced that the circuits were tied together with more customers than normal. So it took out 581 customers for a total of 1,000 hours, 1,045 hours. So 1 hour is what was majority of that measurable right there for the month of August. And then for the jobs for the month, I chose to focus on the underground projects happening in our system. These are both projects in Mesquite. It's so easy to focus on the poles and pole changes and broke poles sometimes that the unsung hero is the underground project sometimes. So this project here is, it happened between the Falcon substation and down towards the Ford dealership in Mesquite. They installed a new feeder or a backbone. It's a new distribution three-phase line that went in that's going to support spreading the loading across our system with that new Falcon substation. And it just shows here some of the specialized equipment that we have on the right, our underground puller, but also the rigging, the manpower, the training that they have to go through to install those cables, not only safely, but then good quality products for, you know, 30 years to come is what we aim for. Inside this vault on the left, it's a manhole. It's like a concrete cell. It feels like, you know, it's a 8 foot wide by or 8 foot long by 6 foot wide, and they're roughly 8 to 10 feet deep. And those men are down in there pulling that wire. This was taken in August, and it was extremely hot. And there's no airflow. It's muggy. It's there's bugs. There's everything down there. So we appreciate their hard work that they put into that, and they do a great job. So initially the men go through and pull all the wire for a project like that, and then they come back through afterwards. Next step is to obviously terminate that wire, connect the ends. On the left here you see the men installing splices inside that vault there. These black tubes, bodies, are a cold shrink that goes over the entire piece, and after that connection it keeps it watertight and in good working condition for a long time. On the right there you see a oil filled switch, essentially is what that is. And it's more of a plug and play. Those has ports on that switch there that they make the terminations, and then they plug onto that switch there. And you can see the manhole cover that Chad Dalton here is leaning over, and you can see those men down inside there, and it just kind of gives you a little more perspective to the workload for the day there and what the men have to do to get that wire installed and get through these projects. Next, I'm going to talk a little bit about our tree trimming and line clearance program that we have going on. We spent a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money, quite honestly, on outage mitigation, fire mitigation, all in accordance with our line clearance program. That's our reasoning for it. We've hired this contractor here for the last couple of years, been an outstanding contractor for us. He's local to the Valley, and I commend him, quite honestly, that he's a safe, very safe company. You know, it's rare that you find a contractor that follows all the safety work practices that you impose upon your own team. He does an outstanding job, and he does it very well by representing Overton Power. You can see he's in the air here, and he's got all his PPE on, but I couldn't get his manpower on the ground in the picture, but trust me, they're same way hard hats. They're being very safe, very diligent, and treating the customer's property with great respect. Great representation of Overton Power here. In the last year, we've focused in on fire mitigation. It's a big topic for the industry nationwide. And so we've narrowed down some of the areas of vegetation on our system that have the dense forest, if you want to call it that, that might cause a problem to our system, or if our lines drop, might cause the fire. The river crossings, that's where all our effort goes. A lot of money and a lot of effort goes into. And this one here in particular is the Bunkerville River, or Bunkerville Bridge River crossing. That same contractor, in fact, went through there and by hand took all that brush down. You can see on the side here on this picture what it was. This is outside of our easement here, but everything on the right he's taken down to the ground, him and his crew, and they haul it all off, they chip it, they haul it all off, and so it's just a clean product when it's done. And then obviously if you're from the area, you know the air weeds, and they pop right back up a week later. So our future goal is to get into a weed sterilization program, and hopefully we cut that down to the ground and we can begin sterilizing through those river crossings and buying us more time until we need to get back in there.
Well, they let you spray tricloc or...
The discussions we've had with the contractors, they're both familiar with it, and there's obviously stipulations where they can and cannot spray within how much feet of the water and such, but yeah, a vast area that they can spray. And it'll buy us many more years before we need to get back in there and do the same thing again. This one's the same thing in Mesquite. This is right by the Hafen Park, the 69 kV river crossing. But same thing, just gives more perspective to what we're having those contractors do. In the old days, we used to take a dozer through there and we just push it out, right? Like that was the old, I wish we could just do that again, but there's water crossings, multiple water crossings across there. We can't do that anymore. We can't leave that behind. And by design, what we have going on here, it's working out very well. Very efficient crew that we have working for us there. And then lastly, safety meeting for the month of August. We had a topic of FR body protection, which is FR clothes. The outside teams are required to wear FR clothes, both top and bottom, pants and shirt, long sleeve shirts. So we had a good discussion on that, lots of good training on that. Job briefings, which is basically the pre-job chance to not only as a leader line out the crew, line out the team of what's going to happen, but then talk about hazards, emergency response locations, all the different topics and what's required in that job briefing by OSHA. So our safety leader talks on that, and then PPE, personal protective equipment, hard hats, leather gloves, safety glasses. That's always the one that comes first to my mind, but there's a whole many more after that that we were taught on. And then attendees, you know, I show 56 attendees this month, and it's just, you're proud to see that because I think we have 60 employees at Open Power right now, so we had a great attendance. It was offered in both valleys, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and we had an amazing attendance again for the month of August. So that's my report, unless I have any questions from Alan.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right.
Kevin?
I do have a comment.
Oh, yeah.
I happened to stop by the First Baptist Church yesterday in Mesquite, and they came to work that morning, and the lights were out, and nobody had reported it. Turns out they're the only three-phase customer in the area, and the mouse had apparently knocked off one leg of the three-phase. They were really impressed with how fast the men got out there and repaired it and had it back on. So it was an attaboy for OT Power.
Good, thank you. Thank you.
I think it seems to me very important that essentially all employees are at the meetings, and even when you talk about some things that may not concern them, office workers and protective equipment. But it's good that they know what we're doing, because I was reading something about your employees. Talk to so many people who are not employed, they're customers, and it gives a reputation. Hey, this company really does a good job and they do it safely. But the average employee, say an office worker, knows about it, they feel good about it, and they spread the word. I think that's good public relations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. All right, Kevin, do you want to give us the sub-ops report?
Sure. Clicker, where are you at? Okay. So Shane Robinson and I, on the 3rd and 4th, went to IPSA meetings in Provo. Of course, some of Kyle's guys went up too. But some of the things that we did when we were up there is we went on a tour of a couple of substations from Lehigh City. And the reason we went on these tours is to get ideas for our Mesquite substation. We're kind of in a really confined space there. We've got to add 220 MVA transformers. We've got to pull out the 210s and add 220s. And so we can't de-energize that in order to do that. So we've got to kind of build around it. So we was looking at some alternatives as to, you know, a smaller footprint. And Lehigh has done this. They have 220 MVA transformers, and they go into a building. It's a really small, compact footprint. So if you look at the picture on the left, that's the entire substation, minus the transmission side. So you got two 220 MVA transformers on the front,
and then it buses into this building, and everything else is enclosed inside that building. The picture on the right is that actually a picture of that building. So you've got, it's metal clad switchgear, and it's kind of got a bad name in the industry, but they make gear now that has fiber optic pickup, light sensing pickup, and I've seen the reports, and they react so quickly that if a mouse gets into that gear and goes to ground, it'll actually open up before that mouse has a chance to even catch on fire. So they're incredibly fast. They have a lot of safety protection involved in it too. So this design, Lehigh City has gone exclusively to this design. They have 7 substations just like this. And it's also going on to Rocky Mountain is also using this design in their new substation. So they feel very confident about it. So that's what we're looking at, trying to implement some of this into that Mesquite substation where we have a really small footprint to work with. The other thing that we went and did while we was up there is we went to Salt Lake to ICC, and they are the company that's building our Falcon Ridge and Raptor buildings. They look very nice. Raptor building is actually being delivered next week. We're excited to see that and have it on site. The Long Drive building is being delivered towards the end of October. So that's a couple of things we did while we was up in Salt Lake to that, or Provo to that meeting.
Kevin, one question. So these are the reclosures inside the metal clad building?
Okay. Yeah.
So that's where you save a lot of the space.
Mm-hmm. Everything's in that building. They actually put LTCs in the transformer, so they go straight from the transformer right into the building and then right from the reclosers out.
So you get rid of the regulator step back
mm-hmm. LTC. Yep. The panels you see on the back side of the building is their outgoing. You open up that panel and there's your outgoing cable out to the yard or switches, wherever you're going to put it to. So really, really neat design. So any other questions on that? Okay. We've implemented the SCADA interface that Tenasca needed to do our power bidding or power brokering or scheduling. They needed a path from our SCADA system to their SCADA system, basically, so they could see our real time data as it come across through our meters, and that piece is installed and they are getting information back on their side. And I think the FTP site is also set up. Steven, do you know if that's completed?
I think that we're still waiting on this, but yeah, that's
so
we're already doing that with Morgan.
Yeah, so we're really close to getting Tenasca the information that they need in order to schedule our power for us. They wanted a little bit of data up front to try to start getting that in line so they can get a good, accurate account of what's going on. So anyway, those pieces are in place now for our SCADA system. This is our 60 MVA transformer. It got delivered on Monday and unloaded. So we've got a new transformer in Torres substation. So it's kind of an interesting thing. This pick took 30 minutes. From lifting off the truck to set it, it was like 15 minutes, I think, from when they lifted it to where it was down in place. But in order to do it, Roush had to bring 6 vehicles down for support for this project. So on the back side of this crane, they had the 4 plates in the middle and then the two outside plates. And that counterbalance is 150,000 pounds. Whoa. And so they had to have a truck for each one of the big ones on the outside and a truck for each, for two of the stacks in the middle. So they had to have four big semi-trucks to bring those down. And they would back those semi-trucks in, they would lift it off and stack it one at a time and put it all together. And it took about 2 hours to get that crane ready to actually lift that transformer off that truck and set it. And then when it was all done, guess what they had to do? Disassemble the entire thing. So it was another 2 hours to disassemble. They were there for most of the day for about a 30-minute pick. Of
Quite a neat process, though. Good, hardworking guys. You can see the riggings. That guy standing in the back of the truck hooking up the riggings, how big those riggings actually were, those nylon ropes that they used to pick that transformer. It's pretty
It's kind of a funny story about how the rigging got. You got to share that. I'll wake these guys up.
Share it. I don't know. So the guy drove down in the truck, and he was bringing the riggings with him. And I guess there was a tire on the side of the road, and he stopped to try to pick it up.
Yeah, spare tire.
And when he backed up, he hit a culvert with the truck and got stuck and couldn't get out.
Oh, no.
So they had to unhook a semi and run down to where he was at and pull him out of the ditch, basically, so that he could get the riggings there. It didn't make us late for the pick. It pushed us back in, but it was funny that he had to go get rescued by his crew in order to get there. So
where was this transformer being set at?
It's at Tortoise. So the 69 bay, if you're looking at from the gate into the substation, it's on the left-hand side of the existing three transformers.
Okay.
So here's it coming off the truck. And that pad, that grading system is neat. That's the first time we've used that. ICPE is the engineer on this, and that's what they spec'd out. And it really turned out nice. It looks really nice, and it's going to work really well for us.
Over the oil container.
Yeah, the fiberglass grating instead of metal, so it's easy to get up and clean out from underneath and stuff. Here's them putting it into place, and the last picture of them, they are done. So they are coming out. I think the date is October 4th. It's still kind of tentative at this time to dress and test this transformer. So they'll come, put all the fins on, put the bushings in, test it out, make sure everything's working right, and then they'll turn it over to us. I reported last month on the fiber optic between Tortoise and Reed Gardner. They actually did that end-to-end testing, which is... It involves us and NV Energy, both on NV Energy on their side and us on the Tortoise side, and they have test equipment set on both ends of the so there's a relay on NV Energy side and a relay on our side, and they will shoot signals back and forth between those relays to each test set and prove out that. If the trip comes through from the NV Energy side, it's going to trip on our side. If it comes from our side, it'll trip on their side. So that's, and that was 2 days worth of testing. And it is done and completed, and everything looks good. So they'll have to do one more set of tests when the breakers have been commissioned and function tested. They'll actually send a transfer trip signal down that fiber optic line into our relays, and that should trip the breakers in the substation, in our substation, so from their end. And so that once that's done, they feel pretty good that they can pass us off and give us the okay on that. So that should be done probably next week or the week after next. We should be able to get that done. So we're getting closer to that cutover time for that 230 line coming into Tortoise. So... I was going to take this out, but I didn't. But this is a transformer that Estuary Power has bought for when they were going to put that solar on the tribe. We're storing this transformer for them, but Virginia Transformer had to come and dress this transformer out to get pressure in it, get the oil in it, and so that they could keep the warranty on the transformer. Interesting, this transformer has 14 sets of fins on it. It goes all the way around that transformer, those fins. And I asked the Virginia transformer guy, you know, why they put so many fins on. Well, it goes in reverse. It goes from 3,400 volts to 69,000 volts. Is that right?
Yeah, 34.
34.5 to 69,000 volts. And that's why there's so many fins, because it's going backwards. It takes a lot more cooling to keep it cool. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. But this is sitting in our Tortoise substation. We're storing it. This is some work that they're doing at Tortoise right now. This was a picture taken today. They're
boring new holes for that 69 bay to go out from that transformer they just said. They're actually going to, on the picture on the left, you can see there's a small pad there. That's a breaker pad. They're going to pour these auger holes tomorrow, I think, starting at 4 a.m. They'll start pouring these holes, these piers, and they should be done with this by the end of the week, I believe. So anyway, a little progress being made at Tortoise. So
amazing.
You guys have any questions for me?
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Right.
That's my presentation.
Let's go to the IGM report.
Menace and I attended the NREA had a manager's meeting. And typically we do those on just via Zoom. But this meeting we held was held in Las Vegas, and it was really informative. We had a gentleman from the company ACES. They do power scheduling, very similar to what Morgan Stanley does. They do scheduling for the company APCO. And he, the gentleman that spoke to us, is a part of their markets division. So he gave us an update on the California ISO and the Desert Southwest and the different markets that are in the western part of the United States. What they're like, who's leaning towards what implications each market has, what the difference is. It was very informative. And then in the afternoon of that meeting, we had three representatives from CAISO come, and they spoke to us. And it was really advantageous to us because the gentleman from ACES stayed. And so when we started asking questions, he started asking questions. And at the beginning of the meeting, everybody from CAISO was like this. And by the end, they were all like this. So that was an interesting dynamic. But actually, we had a wonderful visit. We talked with them about the EDAM, or the day-ahead market. NV Energy has made the decision that they're going to join the EDAM. We talked with them about the changes that have happened as a result of the EIM, which is the energy imbalance market. NV Energy, they believe, has saved a lot of money, but then we were able to express to the panel at CAISO that savings has not necessarily trickled down to the smaller entities like Overton Power, who have transmission charges through NV Energy. And I think we had a very good conversation. They were very open to talk with us. I don't know that anything's going to change with CAISO as a result of our conversation, but we, I feel like, got an education, and I think that we helped them to understand a little bit differently about that not everybody is NV Energy, and that those market decisions don't necessarily affect us in the same way that they do an investor-owned utility. We had multiple meetings with potential customer in the Moapa area. Those right now are projected to be some sizable loads. So we also had some follow-up conversations with NV Energy. Those were great conversations. We had very good discussion on capacity needs, studies that would be required, infrastructure. We talked a lot about the timing of things, and that it used to be that if you wanted to install generation, you could get that done in a couple of years. That generation was 2 years, transmission was about 7 years, but 5 of those years is purely permitting, and that's even for a large entity. We wish that we could get permitting in 7 years, but so those were good information. One of the things that I thought was really interesting is they said you used to be able to get a gas unit to for generation start to finish done in 2 years. And a country in the Middle East has come in and bought many, many units all at once in 2024. And the backlog is so great just purely from that one purchase that's went from a 2 year time frame to just under 5 year. And that's affecting every state in the United States. Well, it's worldwide now. So that was interesting information that we got from them. But overall, we've had very good discussions with NV Energy, and we'll continue those conversations as we talk about the growth in those areas. And then Jack and Mendes and I attended the board meeting for NREA, and that was held up in Ely. And we had a really great presentation by the president of the Nevada Mining Association, and she gave us a very good talk. We have a lot of things, our industry and that industry actually has a lot of things in common. She gave us some very good information on all of the minerals that a human needs in their life. And it was mind-blowing to me, the different types of minerals, what you need, and how many of them you need, and how key it is for the mining, and how many of those minerals come from our state. And then what an important role that we play in providing the power so that they can mine those minerals. So that, I think, was a really good conversation. We also met with the director from Utah Rural Electric Association, and he gave us just some updates on different bills that Utah had put through. One of the bills that Utah has been working on states that if you remove dispatchable power and you replace that with intermittent power, that the reliability from that intermittent power has to match what you removed. So if you remove coal or gas, you have to replace that same reliability from your intermittent resources. And so that will be an interesting thing for us to follow through. And then, of course, the final thing is that we have our annual meeting for NREA, and that is, as you know, October 9th through 11th, and that will be held in Las Vegas. And then the final thing I wanted to just give you guys an update. I had talked with you last month about introducing myself to our key accounts. I've been meeting with our top 15 largest customers as well as the principals of all of our local schools, and that is busy. That's a lot of meetings, but they're going very well. It's been well received, and I'm enjoying getting to know them. Christy has been joining me on all of the meetings with the schools and has helped me to put together some information so that we make sure that we have contact information, such as during outages. We know which one of their staff needs to be contacted, and then we've given them Christy's information so they know who to go to as well. And that concludes my presentation, unless you guys have questions.
Any questions? Or Jack, you want to add anything about the NREA meeting?
I'm just always amazed how prepared, what a good job Carolyn Turner does. She is an amazing person. And she keeps those meetings running well.
Yeah, she's amazing. We're very fortunate to have her in our organization. Okay, first thing I want to let you know is our summer peak was at 124.76 megawatts. So that was about 8.5 megawatts higher than what we had experienced in 2023. So we saw a little bit of a jump in our loads. All of our power is delivered across the electric grid, and it comes into Meade substation, and it comes in various transmission paths, but we take our power off the Meade 230 system. So Stephen, will you go to the next slide for me, please? Oh, can I do that?
You can.
So no, you go ahead. So 3 weeks ago, you might have seen this on the news, one of their 500 kVA transformers, it was a 500 to 230 kV transformer, caught on fire. And it caught on fire, I believe, on a Thursday night, and it burned most of the night. If you go to the next, and this Meade substation is by Boulder City. It's right along where the new I-11 goes. So if you'll go to the next one, this is the aftermath. That's what's left of the transformer. So it was a total loss. Fortunately, the Bureau of Reclamation does have some spare transformers in place, and they had enough capacity that they were able to get through this, and they have a transformer that they can swap out, but it's going to take them years to get a replacement transformer to put in here. So this is kind of a big deal. It didn't cause us much of a problem at this time, but if we have future problems, we could see this eventually come back and affect us. So we're praying that they'll be able to get a transformer as quick as possible and get it in there. Next thing is, Stephen, if you'll go to the next slide. I went to the CRETA meeting at the first of the month. We held our meeting at Page, Arizona. And we started off our meetings with the Bureau of Reclamation gave us a tour of the Glen Canyon Dam. Now, we've talked a lot in here in the past that at CRETA meetings we discuss what the government agencies are doing with the river and with the fish in the river. You can see the bypass tubes running here. Yeah. We're not happy about that.
Why are you doing bypass?
Yeah, they're going bypass because they're releasing the, first of all, the penstocks in the dam are up about in the middle of the dam, and the bypass tubes are at the bottom of the dam. And so they're releasing cold water from the bottom of the lake, and it's supposed to discourage the smallmouth bass from spawning. That is, and Leslie James, the executive director, said, I wish they would have dyed the water green, because that would represent the over $1 million we're losing every week from this bypass. So they're running two bypass tubes. They run this for a good share of the day, and they're doing this for 3 months at over $1 million a week. So, Stephen, go to the next slide. We did, like I say, mention that we've got a tour of the dam. These are the 8 turbines in the dam. They're rated for about 175 megawatts each. Glen Canyon Dam produces about 1,300 megawatts of power. Let's go to the next one, Stephen. We should have a video here. Tremendous force that's coming from these bypasses. One of the side things that we see here is that water comes out at an angle, and it circulates right in front of the dam, and it's creating a hump, or a lump is what they call it, in front of the dam, that I'm sure eventually we're going to have to pay to remove that lump. I talked to him about, you know, why don't you put something on those bypass tubes to shoot it straight down the river? And they go, well, we've talked about that, but we haven't done it yet. So, Stephen, the next one. Tremendous force. I can't really say the water was coming out here like at 110 miles an hour or something like that. It was really, really flying out there, and a lot of water. One of the interesting things that we learned in the meeting, sorry, you guys will have to endure this story again, but one of the Creta people asked, you know, about, you know, they're releasing the cold water from the bottom, and he asked, he said, you have all the water coming in from the river, so that's a lot of warm water sitting on top. How does it circulate? And the people at the Bureau of Reclamation said, well, it sits on top until the wintertime, and then that water on top gets cold, and then it starts to drop and it circulates. But the interesting thing is it only circulates to the top of the penstocks. And so they're draining the cold water out from the penstocks down to the tubes. And so I asked them, how long can you do that without using up all the cold water? And they said about 2 years. So they're going to do this year and next year, and then the following year they're going to be out of cold water, because as that lake level comes down, it's going to warm the whole lake. And then the second problem that they'll face is the smallmouth bass will be able to survive those warmer temperatures. Pretty soon they'll be shooting them, the smallmouth bass, through the bypass tubes, and that's going to create a problem. So it's interesting how much money they spend to do things that they haven't completely figured out yet. Let's go to the next slide, Stephen. On Friday, we rented two rubber boats, and we went down to Lee's Ferry, and then we went upriver toward the Glen Canyon Dam. And go to the next one, Stephen. If you haven't seen it, this is a view of Horseshoe Bend from the bottom. You always get to see the pictures from the top, but this is the bottom. Go to the next one, Stephen. So if you go to the left up there, you'll find Glen Canyon Dam up there. So the water comes down and it turns here. And this is actually a man-made island that we're on. On the other side between our boats and the canyon wall, there's a little bit of a trickle of water goes through, and it's called what they call the slough. Now, last time we were here, the water was up almost to the top of this island, and water was running through quite a bit better. But the water's down about 8 feet right now in the river, because they're conserving because of all the water they're releasing for bypasses. So they have to conserve at other times. But what's happened is it's trapped water on the other side of this island in the slough, and there's a non-native fish in there called an Arizona green sunfish that they're trying to remove. They've tried to poison them. They've tried to electrofish them. They can't get them out of there. And when we were there 5 years ago, if I would have had a shovel in 2 hours, I could have had water running through there and those fish would have been gone. But they refused to do that for some reason. And so that continues to be a problem. The Arizona green sunfish are non-native fish and they don't like them. Now there's some other non-native fish in the river that they also are trying to get rid of. They have brown trout in there that eat the humpback chub. And so they have used our power revenues for a good purpose as a bounty for fishermen to fish out the brown trout. They said that there was a gentleman, they were paying up to $300 and sometimes up to $500 per brown trout that was fished out of the river. And they said last summer a gentleman made $20,000 over the course of the summer fishing out brown trout. But they're still there. A great story we heard is another guy heard this story and decided he was going to go fish out some brown trout. And he went and caught just tons of fish and he took them in to turn them in. And he had caught rainbow trout instead of brown trout. And he was fined $2,000 for exceeding his limit. And another government program that's gone bad. So, Stephen, I think that's my last one. Yep. Yeah, okay. So, interesting, on this trip down the river, we got to, on my boat, the National Park Service biologist was on there, and we got to ask him questions. It was real interesting. I asked him how many smallmouth bass they were catching every week. He said they're catching about 20 smallmouth bass a week. We talked about electrofishing. He says he does electrofish to catch them, but he can only stun them. He can't kill them. What they do is they stun the fish, and they have certain areas where they go to. They stun the fish. They scoop out all the fish. They throw the good ones back, and they keep the brown trout and the smallmouth bass. And then they take those to a rehabilitation center in Phoenix, and they nurse them back to health. I'm serious. This is a true story. They take them to Phoenix and nurse them back to health, and then they make those available for the tribes to take as food if they want to use those.
It sounds like a homeless program.
It is kind of like that. It's kind of like that. So we pay a tremendous amount of money for these things to happen. And that's the purpose of CRETA, is to try to minimize or eliminate these types of things. We've been able to minimize a lot of things, but we're still working on eliminating some things. I just want to give you a report on a follow-up to Melissa talked about us working with some developers. I got a call from Tenasca, who is going to be our power supplier beginning on January 1st. They talked to me and they said nationwide that they work with a number of data centers. And what they do is they find locations for the data centers and then they use that to sell power. And they asked if we'd be interested in doing something in our area. And we expressed an interest in that. They're looking to match us up. We've got some more meetings with Tenasca where we will talk about this more. But things are moving along in that regard with some additional growth coming to our area. And that is all of my report, unless you have any questions for me.
At the very first you mentioned about new record sales and everything. You know, some time ago you gave us a real nice little fact sheet.
Yes.
Could we get that updated? We have more customers now, apparently new high and stuff. I thought that was, I've used it a couple of times, people ask me. I
look at it before I go in.
Yeah, you bet. You bet I can do that. If somebody finds something I've done useful, I'm more than happy to repeat it. Because that's not always the case.
this new high, is this the new norm, or was it just because we had an exceptionally warm summer?
Well,
Man factory come in.
You know, it's kind of interesting because we've seen the expansion of rooftop solar. We've seen natural gas be installed in Mesquite, yet we're still seeing record highs. So I think that the summer heat certainly had something to do with it, but with the growth that we're experiencing and the way that people are electrifying everything, I think we're going to continue to go up. But we probably won't have a jump like we did this year, and we might go back next year depending on what the weather is, because it's totally weather driven. But in the next few years, we'll exceed the 124 megawatts. So we can continue, we'll continue to see that go up.
What's our quarterly bill at third quarter? Are we above our bandwidth at this point?
So we won't see that till the end of this month, but I'm certain that we're going to have some bandwidth charges.
We bought extra hydro, but I still think that we're going to be without.
Outside of that.
And just so you're also aware, I didn't have this on my list, and we should have remembered this, but we are making progress on purchasing excess hydro for next year, and Tenasca has signed off on that so that we can continue to get some extra hydro that's been laid off by the industries in Las Vegas.
How does that work? Is that in addition to our contract?
Yes.
Or replaces part of the contract?
Yeah, what they do is they market that amongst the existing customers when they have excess, and we get first shot at it. There's three of us that are eligible to do that, and all three of us want that layoff power. So they split it three ways, and we take a share. Okay, with that, Jonathan, how about we go through the financial presentation?
Begin with our statement of operations on line one. We have our operating revenues total for August, $5,724,000. Our line three cost of purchase power was $2,688,000, which contributed to our total cost of electric service on line 20 of $4 million. On line 22, we have our interest received on investments in the amount of $151,000, which all contributed to our line 29 margins of $1,876,000, which brings our year-to-date total margins of $7,440,000. On our balance sheet, getting on the asset side, on line three, we have a total utility plant value of $178,509,000. On line eight, we have investments in associated organizations. Line 15, cash. Line 18, temporary investments. Line 23, materials and supplies, all contributing to our total asset value of $182,456,000. And with our liability and equity side, we have a total margins and equities on line 36 of $123,126,000. We have our line 40 long-term debt, line 48 accounts payable, and again, all contributing to our total liability and equity amount of $182,456,000.
On that particular sheet, as I kind of mentioned to you, on line 32 and 33, operating margins, I noticed that we were informed that the $94 million on line 32 represents since inception of this district. That seems to be meaningless to me. Who cares? But what I do care about is how much we made last year and how we're doing this year, which is the two lines right there. And it does say prior year. Would you look into that and see? We've been using this for as long as I've been around.
Right.
Think about revising that a little bit. I know we got the form from somebody sometime, but think about revising that, because knowing how we're doing margin-wise seems fairly important. What we did in the past is back to inception is meaningless to me anyway. That's not true.
Could you go back on the slide, please?
Yeah.
So if you look on our statement of operations, on the far right is column D, and that's per month. Then it's budget, and so column B is where are we at this year for our margins? So we show right now we're at $7,440,000.
What line are you talking
about? Column B.
Column
the third.
B.
The bottom line.
Oh, at the very bottom. Okay.
If you look one column over to the left, that's last year. Uh-huh. So at this time, in August of last year, our margins were $7,272,000. So this would be the easy place for you to say, where were we in comparison at this time of year for the prior year?
Okay, then why do we even have it on the next page?
Because that's the way financial statements work. So at the end of the year...
No, that's the way our finances...
These are issued by CFC. This is the CFC Form 7.
So at the end of the year, we're going to take that $7 million that we have right now, and we're going to move that to prior period margins, and then you're going to start anew this year on your statement of operations.
So we'll have $101 million or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is your assets that you've had
in
the whole time.
I mean, this is supposedly all valuable stuff, right? What does that make any difference to anything?
Well, I can tell you one place it made a difference, and that was when we had our lawsuit back in around 2000. Uh-huh. Our prior year margins were, I believe they were negative, weren't they? So we have recovered since then. So that gives you an indication of how we've recovered from that time. And if we ever have future problems, we'll see those reflected on those numbers. So it's not something that's super important, but it's something that is valuable.
And the reason that we point out to you line number 36 that is your total margins and equities is because one of the things that Mendes is alluding to was when we had negative equity based on that lawsuit, we didn't receive any of the discounts from CFC. And one of the requirements for CFC is that you have 40% of your equities as a part of your margin, or I'm sorry, of your assets. Mm-hmm. So that's why we point that line out to you, so that you follow important. That.
Yeah, it contributes to that.
Then in line 32, it should say prior years, not year.
Yeah, prior period.
Or cumulative from the inception or something, but that's not...
Yeah,
The statement. Okay, well.
And we could also include, or I can provide you with a year-to-date comparison with the balance sheet.
You have it on the next sheet at the bottom that you pointed out to me. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, that's just a statement of operations, but if you wanted on the balance sheet here... This just shows the year-to-date, a comparison of the prior period, 2023.
So we get all nervous about saying, change the sheet, because these are put together by FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. They set the system of accounting for utilities, and CFC uses that. So this is used in our industry.
Yeah, we didn't make up this form. Yeah. This is the financial statements that are given us in the
I noticed there's a number of lines there that we don't need to
use. Right. Yeah, and that's why. Because other utilities use them and we don't.
There's no federal rule, though. We have to use it, is there?
No, but it makes sense to, because we go to CFC for loans and the key ratios and all those things are based on what's on the sheet. And if you go to something different, you lose all that capability.
Here's our cash balances and our checking accounts. We had a total value of $4,616,000. And our investment accounts, the assets in our Morton account, we closed with a value of $32,146,000. Average rate of return in that account was 4.68%. And then our Goldman Sachs account closed with a value of $615,000 with an average rate of return of 5.18%.
Have they already factored in the rate cut there, or
for the
Goldman Sachs?
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But guess what else we get to do soon?
So the rate cut was 50 basis points, was twice of what they were anticipating, or well, projecting that would happen. Here's a breakdown of our assets in our Morton account by security pipe in the pie graph and by security duration in the bar graph. And this slide I've included, this is actually three slides. It's the total of our assets held in our Morton account, and it's been sorted by purchase yield from least to greatest. So this is one of three slides. It's showing the purchase yield as the least, and then the next slide here are 4 and 5% returns, and then on the final slide here are 5 and 6, all averaging a 4.67% rate of return. As of October 31st, 2024, OPD had a total of 18,582 customers. And our ratios at the bottom are modified debt service coverage ratio with estimates through the end of the year is 2.58. And our equity as a percentage of assets, 67.48%, which that's what our total margins that we were discussing earlier is in comparison to our total assets, where we can receive discounts from our CFC loans for having that, meeting that criteria, which is the 39.5%. And then our times interest earned ratio is 7.33. Connection fees, we had a total of 18 for August, valued at $17,088. Our current billing arrangements, we have 63 residential customers at $16,035 and 10 commercial customers at $4,048. And then our roundup programs in each valley are the balances are reported there. The detail on our CFC loans is here. Our next quarterly payment is due this month, September 30th, in the amount of $1,423,000. And that payment is scheduled to be made on time and paid in full. This is a breakdown of our revenue by customer class, and with the totals on this slide here. And down at the bottom, our monthly cost for August was 4.84%, our monthly revenue, 9.9%, or I'm sorry, 9.9 cents kilowatt hour, and our average 2024 cost is 4.92 cents. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
What are we going to do the loan then?
I'm so excited to call them tomorrow.
we were waiting until now to start getting quotes, and so tomorrow we're going to be in constant communication and trying to get the best rate between September 30th.
They're going to give us a future one too, so projecting two more cuts before the end of the year.
We have to lock this by September 30th, so we'll make that decision, and then we won't be able to take advantage of those, but still half a basis points help, so yeah.
But doesn't that affect also the rate of return we get? So they cut the rate, so that, does that work out now where there's no profit in it for us, perhaps, as opposed to paying off the loan, as was suggested before?
Well, one of the things that when we did our cost-benefit analysis was if we put the money into the Goldman Sachs, that one is a day rate, and so tomorrow we will see that rate drop. Yep. But we've removed most of the money from that. Our Morton assets are invested for up to 4 years. Yeah. And so those rates are locked. As some of these older ones drop off and we reinvest them, we see that he sorted those, and the oldest ones are right now paying at just over 1%. So we still think that we're going to make more than what we had planned. But that $1.3 million that we've invested, we have a rate of return right now of the average is 4.67%.
The guys to my right here are planning on spending a lot of that as it comes off the boat. So. We have a lot of projects going.
Planning already have quite a bit.
all our reports?
We're done with the reports. Thank you.
We're going to go to item H, review and possible approval of the 2025 employee health and life insurance plans for possible action.
So Mr. Fullman and his department have done some work on this, and he will head up this action item.
And I can think of no one better than Kelly to do this. She's our benefits administrator. She does a wonderful job. She can answer any one of your questions. She's very knowledgeable. And so here we go, Kelly. And it's really three slides, so.
You can come up here. You don't have to stay back there. if you can get out.
There's not much to say.
Your choice was to stay back.
It's pretty self-explanatory, so. There we go. I think everybody got all of the information ahead of time for the rates. And so here's the last 5 years, and we really just need 2025. Anybody have any questions?
Kelly, walk us through just on the slide where we're looking for 2025 and the changes that have been, that were required to be made for 2025.
Okay. Well, every year the IRS sets the rules for everything that we do for HSA, health insurance to save, and a high deductible health plan, 401k. So that changes every year. And in 2025, the minimum deductible has to be $1,650 for an individual and $3,300 for a family in order to have an HSA account. So, of course, we all have HSA accounts, and so we up that deductible to match that. That's the lowest we can go. I did do pricing for other deductibles. I believe that you all received that also. If anybody has any questions about that. So we just always stay at the required IRS rules.
So that our employees will pay $50 more. Is that correct?
An individual for their deductible has to pay the $1,650 before the insurance pays anything.
And then $100 for a family, right?
Yes.
Anybody else on the board have any questions?
No, the next slide. Action item.
So, same thing we just talked about, the deductible is increasing. Last year we were on track to spend the $1.3 million, and now 2025, $1.4, which is a $70,000 increase. In the grand scheme of things, that doesn't look like a lot, right?
Well, I think it's also important to note that, you know, the increase is almost $71,000. We have 60 employees, so it's basically per year about $1,100 per employee, right? Is the base increase.
Inflation. Do we have more employees this year than last year, though?
I think we worked out about the same, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I think last year we started with 59 employees on insurance, 9 individuals, 50 families. And so, you know, through the year, an individual got married, so we went to the family plan. Some people want to take their spouse off because they have better insurance. Then that individual goes, or family goes to an individual. So there's changes throughout the year that, you know, create some of the increase or decrease.
So with all that being said, our recommendation is to approve the 2025 health insurance plan through NRECA as presented.
That is correct.
And I honestly don't think you're going to find any place that's going to tell you that their insurance rates have gone down.
Yeah.
Even those of us that might be a little bit older are shocked when the birthday card they send you on your supplemental is to tell you happy birthday and your rates are going up every year.
Wow.
So
yeah, it never stops.
It's not just OPD, I think it's just across the board.
Yep, just going up. Good thing we're not doing car insurance.
Yeah,
health insurance. That's crazy too.
And you know, periodically Kelly looks at bidding this through other providers. We've never had anybody that's been able to match what NRECA does. And in essence, NRECA bids this out amongst the different providers as well before they even present that. So.
And a lot of other insurance companies, if we have retirees on the plan, which I currently do have a couple of retirees that can stay on the plan until they're 65, they don't accept retirees. Or there's always some kind of stipulation that you can't do this or that. So that does create a problem in retirement insurance for everybody.
There's so much that enters into it.
Yes.
I make a motion we accept the 2025 health plans. Well, he has presented to us. The aid of Scott.
And I'll second that motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve the 2025 health insurance plan through NRECA as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Kelly.
You're welcome.
And Scott.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're going to. Item I, review and possible acceptance of general manager retirement letter for a possible action.
Well, I submitted my letter to you in accordance with my contract. I was supposed to provide 6 months notice before exiting my contract early. My contract runs through October of 2025. I've expressed my interest in retiring in April of 25, so I'm in essence giving you my 6 months notice that I would like to retire and go my merry way.
I move we accept it.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the GM CEO's retirement letter as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Hesitantly.
Thank you,
Rose.
Thank you.
Are you thanking him for leaving or thanking him for staying as long as he has?
Well, thank you. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Okay.
Be more so, appreciate it.
No more trips up the river, dude. Fishing.
As we get closer to that day, I'll share more of my feelings in regard to this. But at this time, I just want to say thanks, and I'm still committed to doing what I need to do and training your interim general manager and working with these guys. And hopefully, you don't see any drop off in the work that happens.
Okay. Make sure you take pictures and show us all the brown fish you catch.
Okay, item J, review and possible approval of the interim CEO general manager contract and salary, and to ratify the current interim CEO general manager compensation for possible action. So who wants to start?
Well, I'll kick it off since, we at our last meeting, Melissa was appointed the interim general manager on the org chart, and as is my purview, I set her salary at a certain level, which is $187,452, and I do realize that with this position going on that needs to be ratified and approved by the board. But I know that she has also done some work on her contract in conjunction with this, and we present these together for your consideration.
Okay. Does anybody in the board have anything, any comments, any questions?
I have a couple of comments on the contract. One, I think that we should just round it up to the next $10. I mean, nobody gets paid, down to the dollar, hardly. Let's see, $4.46. Just make it $4.50. I mean, it's silly, but it just simplifies everything. I would think the payroll department would
trying to divide the number if it isn't a lot of numbers. You know,
so. My engineering experience prevents me from doing those types of things. So, but I can do that.
Secondly, the vacation. Occurs vacation at a regular time. One of the things from past experience is that some people get so involved in work, they don't take any time off. They save it. Companies have recognized this, and some of them put a limit on the amount you can save, and others put that you have to take some off. And I think it's real important that, especially in management positions, that you take some time off each year. It's rejuvenation. That's what it's all for, anyway. And I notice that's not included. And I would like to see a provision that the new general manager has to take at least a week away each year. Maybe they want to save the rest. That's up to them. But when you're in a position of management, you need some time away from work once in a while to get rejuvenated and stuff, I think. And I think we ought to include that. And the last thing I comment about, I noticed that the severance pay was a year. I think that's too much at the beginning. I think maybe 6 months severance pay is more appropriate for the first contract here. This is for essentially a year and a half from now. And at the end of that time, we'll renegotiate a new contract, new salary, hopefully round to the next $10. And we can increase the amount of severance pay. But it seems to me that a year's severance pay when you've only worked a year at the job is a little high. At least that's my comment.
So I know Melissa probably wants to jump in here, so forgive me if I do.
Okay.
But I just want to tell you my personal experience. I've tried to take vacations, and I was just talking about my wife about this the other day. I had been to Washington, D.C. and met with some staff there. And about a month later, I went on vacation, and sure enough, I'm there in Disney World, and I get a call from the Senate staff. And my wife has fond memories of her and my son riding the rides while I was sitting on a park bench for 2 hours talking to the Senate staffer in Disney World. I think it's nice to be able to say you're going to take vacation, but it's impossible. When I go on vacation, I have not been on a vacation yet where I haven't got calls from vendors, suppliers, sometimes staff, sometimes there's power outages, sometimes I get questions from you guys, sometimes customers. It just doesn't happen. And me personally, if you told me I had to take 4 days and I got calls every day, I would be furious. I don't mind it if I go and I get calls and it's okay, but if you make me take vacation, then I still feel calls. I would say, why am I doing this? I don't know if you feel that way or not, but that's the way I would feel.
Yesterday, Monday, I took half a day of sick, and yesterday I took an entire day of sick, and I answered 4 emails, 2 from board members that were required a response. I had 3 calls while I was driving and about 7 text messages from staff. I don't mind that. I think that's part of the job, and that's on a sick day. I agree with you. I think that everybody should have time off. I'm a little hesitant to be contractually obligated, especially in my first year where I feel like I need to be at everything to get my feet on the ground. I think in the future, I encourage all of our staff to take at least 1 week of vacation, hopefully more, honestly. But for right now, I'm a little hesitant to sign my name that says I absolutely will take a week's vacation, and then at the end of the year be like, it's April, I got to take this last week before board meeting off so that I don't have to report to Mike that I wasn't able to get my vacation in. It's my only hesitancy, but I agree with the thought of that, and I believe my husband would too. He would enjoy for me to take some time off once in a while as well.
Well, you know, again, I'm jumping in here, but maybe I like the idea and maybe it can work, but I think that we have to be staffed a little bit differently. And maybe this is something that you can tackle as you go down the road. But somebody else can be in charge that she can forward her calls to or something like that. But right now, we're just not set up to do that.
My turn?
Maybe we ought to work towards that situation, though, because I worked in a high-pressure situation, too, and the tendency is to stay there because you're on top of everything and working at it. But the fact is, life goes on, you know, and a little time away from the job, sometimes they get you new ideas, say, why in the heck did we? Yeah, you're not going to totally divorce yourself, but my goodness, somebody can handle a call for you. You know, it seems that way. And you had an assistant, GM, didn't you?
I did for a while, but not the whole time.
No, not just kidding.
Yeah. And that helps. That helps.
Yeah. But maybe somebody needs to be appointed the assistant when the boss goes.
Okay, my turn. Mike had sent me an email with what his suggestions were. And I have to tell you, the 1 week vacation, I totally agree with. But I also agree with what you're saying. This is new. We've got a year. We just talked about in a year when we do an additional, a new contract or whatever we're going to do. I think you have to work towards in a year being able to say that you're going to do that. I have just had an incident with somebody that I work with that has had to step away from his job because he waited too long. And the stress builds up until you hit that day where it really is too much. And I think that if you would work with these gentlemen, these wonderful gentlemen, I am sure that there is somebody for 1 week that could step in. You could make sure you time it at a time that it would normally work out okay. Obviously, everything doesn't always work out the way you want it. But one of the things we talked about when we talked about replacing Mendez is he has his hand in too many pots and his brain is there with it. And we need to be able to bring whichever one of the three of you brought in, and that you all had to understand that we want you, the person that gets it, to be able to start delegating. There needs to be some delegation of different meetings, different organizations. And I think over the next year, maybe you should not concentrate on it, but make it something that you make a real effort to do, so that when that first year is up and we're all very happy, you'll be happy, you'll want to make sure that you take that vacation. I think it's something that we could give her the year to make that decision, because it's going to still be a learning process. And I know you guys have spent a lot of time going to all the different meetings and everything, but it is like whoosh, and then you're going to have to sort it out. Spell that right, Becky. You can sort it out over the next year. You can go, you know what, Randall handles that so good. We should really have him take care of that. So that all of those meetings, you know, as I look at Mendez's report here, you know, all of the different meetings, surely some of those can be delegated to other people. With a nice little written report back to the general manager telling him this is what we learned, this is what we did, this is what we agreed to, this is what we think would be bad, whatever. So all I would ask of you, I like the roundup too, I'm one of those people that it's like the odd pennies drive me crazy. But I think rounding up, I think an honest effort to try and get to a place where you can take that week's vacation without getting the phone calls. Don't take your phone with you. It's a good way. And I do agree with him. On the first year, the severance would be a 6-month severance.
But can I clarify that?
Yes.
The termination severance pay clause starts with other than at the review period, 1 year after manager becomes da-da-da, this is what happens.
Okay.
So that 1 year severance does not apply to that 1 year period.
Okay.
It is only after the 1 year when you've maintained her as general manager beyond the year, you've excelled her contract for another 3 years, or at least that's what this says, then, and only then, if you're going to fire her for cause, is she entitled to the 1 year severance. That does not apply at the 1 year period.
Okay, that's good.
Well, then,
I've got that right? Isn't that right?
That takes care of it. Well, we got five more people to talk yet.
I don't think we need to mandate how much vacation that you're required to take. I do think it's a good idea for you to have vacation. But if you aren't taking any and you feel like you can't, then we need to look at why. And do we need to encourage you to share the load, train people, you know, what needs to happen? I don't feel like we need to put a clause in there you have to be gone for 7 days or anything myself.
Well, I'm
sure you know, you're interested in being able to be away.
Yes.
You're getting trained excellently right now. I know you've been training people that are very capable. So hopefully that won't be a big issue. If you feel like you can get away, I'm sure stuff will chase you around. But that's my thought on that.
It's probably something we just need to review that vacation policy at some point next year, review that. Because it's not just you, it's everyone in the company. It was received between 1 week and 4 weeks a year.
Encourage them to have
some
time to themselves.
Because it's not being used for compensating for that time.
I thought the reason vacations were put in is for that renewal period. This company doesn't have to do vacation, but it's become habit, really. And that's the only reason I'm for it, is the renewal period. But I find that your point about the first year being, you know, a lot of things, extra work perhaps, but after that, I think it's really important that maybe you look at that for your staff.
So after that first year, it's something we can all discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Come back and talk about.
Yeah, I think the vacation needs to have some review, because I look at my own experience, and I think it was harder for my father to take vacation than it was to not take vacation. Preparation to leave his business for a week or whatever, but he thought he owed that to his family. And I think we need to really look at that. That's what vacation is all about. I can list all the vacation experiences that I was provided because he made that effort. And we can't guide everybody's life, but we need to give an incentive.
And I think what you just said is true. Like, your father always felt like he couldn't. Having been that business owner and being locked in all the time to like, I can't go now. I wish now, at this point in my life, that's a mistake in my life. I should have forced myself at different times to take that week here and there with my family to do things. And especially when you have young children, you know, you're in a position where they're only going to be there at that age one time. And I put too much stress on myself, because when you're the head, you feel that responsibility to everybody. Everybody sitting on that side of the table, you feel that responsibility to them also. Mm-hmm. And so you feel that you feel that extra pressure right there, which is, again, creating another reason why you need to be able to try and get away. I'll hog tie you and drag you. But I agree, in a year to talk about it is more than reasonable.
Okay, thank you.
Now, again, she's being told in here that she's going to comply with the current policy of the report. So at any time, you don't have to worry about her individually.
Right.
I think it's a company-wide issue.
Yes.
You can at any time address the vacation policy, and that will affect her because the contract says she's supposed to follow the vacation policy. So you don't have to wait the year. You can do this 3 months from now, next month, whatever. Look at the policy, modify the policy to apply to all the employees.
And we can get input from employees before we address it.
They kind of like the current policy. I've heard through the grapevine.
You know, we need to provide an opportunity for you to go on vacation.
Yeah.
Everyone, you're different. Some of you probably, Penny likes, love to be at work. Some of us love to be at work, some of us hate to be at work. And I don't think we need to decide what you guys want to do. We need to give you an opportunity to do what you want to do. If our policy doesn't allow that, then we'll even look at it. If it does, we might want to encourage you to take a day off or whatever, but I don't think we need to mandate that.
I hate the vacation policy because every time I need somebody, they're on vacation.
Menace is pushing for his last act. No vacation.
Basically, this has kind of taken us off topic.
Rich, you're kind of in that mold, right?
And realize it's not part on of the other side of the
So does anybody have a motion or recommendation or more questions?
I'll move. We accept the contract with the provision that all dollar amounts in there are raised to the next 10, zero number, 10. And second,
and exclusively.
You want to just pay 42 cents, I don't
know. Whatever. It's zero.
Did Chad second it?
Yep, I
second it. That's what I heard. So hopefully this is correct then. It's been moved and seconded to approve the CEO general manager employment contract and associated salary with the dollar amount being rounded up to ratify the interim CEO compensation as presented. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Is the rounding up a little bit vague?
No, we'll do it. I'll have Jonathan double check my
numbers. Rounded up from the nearest 10,000. She got it.
She understood.
Pirate!
Cool it!
Okay, item K, is there any public comment?
Looks like they turned off the lights and went home.
Yeah. Are there any trustee comments?
Yeah, I have a comment. Recently in the local paper, an advertisement was taken out indicating that Mesquite doesn't have any representation on this board. And I certainly object to that. And Mesquite has assigned two directors to represent their community. And I find that pretty offensive. And I believe it also said Bunkerville, which may affect our person over there. And I think that kind of rhetoric is inappropriate, as I think election times, I guess, always bring some things out. But I think fact-checking and making that kind of statement is an accusation against the board members. And I find that very objective. That's all.
Any other comments by anybody?
I have just a comment. I don't, you guys would help me understand this, but I was reading, and in Utah, they had to reject their rate raise because the members didn't like it. Did you guys read that?
Mm-hmm.
I'll find the article and send it to you.
Was that a Kowal?
Or was it an IOU?
No, it was Rocky Mountain. Rocky was doing a rate increase, but I didn't realize that it got rejected. I thought it...
And who's rejecting that? I was curious how that works.
Well, that would be, if it's Rocky Mountain, then that would be the PUC.
PUC,
because
yeah.
It's an investor-owned.
It was the customers who
advocated
to get it rejected.
The consumer advocate that had done that? Yeah.
I will do some research.
I was confused. I just thought you guys would be able to enlighten me.
If you find it, would you send it
out? Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Nevada has a similar person. They have a consumer advocate that argues against every rate case that Southwest Gas and NV Energy take to the PUC. And that person that used to do that is now the head of the Colorado River Commission, by the way. So.
Okay. Item M, approval of the next board meeting, October 16th, 3 p.m. in the Mesquite office.
I'll move that we have the meeting then.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to have the meeting.
Mike.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to have the next board meeting October 16th at 3 p.m. in the Mesquite boardroom. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Are we going into?
Yes, I have an item that I need to take before the board.
Want to take a 5 minute break?
Yeah.
Or kind of
yeah.
Just go for it.
That's number one. Good.